Hello and welcome to another episode of Through the Web with me, Dagogo.
Me, Tosif.
And I'm Braden.
And here we cover all things tech, business and internet.
And we haven't been covering any of those things for a while. So
it has been a little while.
It's almost a bit rusty. You know, you're trying to adjust your chair. The mics are
forgotten
all
how this works.
You know, we forgot Braden was in the room with us.
Been a while.
Yeah. Do we just go into having a quick discussion of how we've been so far, what we've been up to? Probably got a few followers who might wanna catch up. But if you're not one of them, you can skip to the chapter markers. But for the rest maybe the seven of you who are still keen for this podcast, not seven, it's more than seven. How have you been, Dagogo? What's been up?
I've been good. Like usual, working, researching. Yeah. There's been a few little things going on here and there, but overall,
right, yes. Good. Yeah, a few things.
Overall, I'm good, though.
Okay, that's good to know. Yes, it's been very similar for me. I don't wear the Pixel Watch anymore. I can't see you wearing your Apple Watch as well.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a change from me when we last spoke.
I'll get back on it. Ever since I got back from Melbourne, I just...
So
I've worn it like here and there, but not every day like I used to. So just a habit that I dropped for some reason.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And do you miss, like, you know, being able to track stuff? And
yeah, it was helpful. I don't know, like, it just got annoying to sleep with a couple of times. I was like, I'll just take it off and just never put it back on. So
yeah, well, I'm wearing the Whoop now, which is, again, not a smartwatch. It's more of a fitness tracker. And this is actually better in terms of being able to sleep with it on. Mm-hmm. So, again, you know, I use the Pixel Watch mostly for the fitness tracking and, you know, whatnot. But so I kind of totally ditched the idea of smartwatches, at least for now. I think the idea of being able to be there in terms of emergency calls was good. Mm. The only thing that I probably would have liked. Mm. But other than that, it's just, I don't know. Braden, how have you been?
Good. Same old, honestly. Just editing and shooting here and there and, yeah, the usual.
Yeah, and you seem like you've been getting into running a lot more, so that's good.
Yep, I clocked a 5K, like proper, I didn't stop for once. I did that twice. That's the best I've gotten so far. But yeah, I'm doing five times a week and trying not to burn myself out, but it's good. Yeah.
Hitting a few PRs on the way.
Yep.
Do you use any apps for it, like Strava or anything like
I'm
that?
I'm using the Nike Run.
The Nike
app.
One?
Yeah.
Oh, we added each other, didn't we?
Yeah.
I got to check your,
my stats.
Stats and see if I can. You should join too.
Yeah.
We should do a Cold Fusion one. Like, get all the Cold Fusion fans running.
Damn. Yeah, okay. Bit of a health.
Get people to be more healthy. And
nothing wrong with that.
Anything you've been, you know, following, watching, anything of interest, music, I don't know, something a bit offshoot?
I guess we'll talk about it later, maybe in a future episode, but
sure.
The music AI, Udio,
yes,
that's come out in the past few weeks is absolutely insane. Like, I think if you haven't been following music AI, you'd probably still think it was how Google ML was. I don't know if you remember that, where it was just... Oh, it's music, but it's just not good. Not good at all. But I think with Udio, it's kind of gotten to that stage where it's almost polished enough to just be like indistinguishable from an artist-made song, which I thought I'd never hear myself saying. Because I was for the longest time thinking that wasn't possible. But these guys kind of came out of nowhere, ex-DeepMind people behind it with some other collaborators, and they've come out with something that's just crazy. So
we'll actually get into that a bit more into this episode actually in and of itself. But have you been playing a lot with it?
Yeah, well, last week I did, and the week before I did a little bit, but not so much. I haven't really touched it this week. But I have been playing around with it quite a bit, and I've kind of understood how it works and what it's really like. So for people who don't know, it's like a website platform.
Yeah.
You start off with a prompt where it could be either what you want the song to feel like or the instruments it has involved, and then it creates a 30-second snippet. And then from there you can decide to, or you can add your own lyrics actually before this, but you can decide to extend it either in one direction or the other direction, so before or after, or you can add an intro and outro. So that's essentially the basics. Yeah. But when you use it, you find that it tends to give good results if you know how to, describe what you want quite well, but also it doesn't understand when something's good. So if there's a potential hook that's there and you want to extend it, it'll go off and do something else, and it doesn't really repeat itself well. It doesn't really remember that well. What's it can continue from like the borderlines of each section, but if you want a cohesive story, that's a bit harder to do. So it kind of loses track of what it's doing.
Yeah. So somebody I remember described it as the chat GPT for music, but it sounds like, you know, the chat GPT's early version, you know, the first robust version of it for the music side of things.
Yes.
So yeah. And then we'll get into that a bit deeper into this episode. But, you know, we've obviously slowed down a little bit with the podcast this year, as we've kind of mentioned in a few other places that we're trying to focus more on the main channel. And of course, you know, we wanted to make sure that whenever we come here and do the episode, we have something solid to say. And also, we want to focus more on interviews this year. So you probably would have seen the one with, you know, CoffeeZilla and Mentor Pilot. So we've actually had a fair few subscribers from the aviation side of things. So hello, if you're from the aviation YouTube. What's the usual thing? The aviation tube, I think, would be the... You know how people say, you know, if you're into books and you follow TikTok, yeah, it's book talk.
I get it. But I guess it makes sense. Yeah, just haven't heard it.
So, but other than that, you know, we don't generally talk a lot about aviation, so you probably find that soon. but either way, welcome to the channel. What we are going to talk about today is the Humane AI Pin launch. I think starting to go out to the public. Mainly started with influencers getting their hands on them, and lots of YouTubers and tech reviewers finally reviewing it while seeing the physical product themselves, and also how it was reviewed, and then also how MQBHD became like the face of the criticism that it received, and how there were so many quote-unquote ethical questions about how you should review a product. So I thought all of that was very interesting, especially because we've been following the Humane journey for a long time, and you know, even before we started this podcast a couple of years ago now, we were looking at interesting people to interview, you know, as kind of make a list and try and reach out. And I remember I asked you, like, you know, do you follow any interesting companies that you wanted to cover? And you mentioned, yeah, Humane is one that I've been trying to keep an eye on for a while now, because they are not a new company. They've been around since 2019, before COVID. Yeah. And I think you've been following some of their earlier stuff. And, you know, that's when I first heard about it. And then I know that Sam Shepard, who's the marketing, who I think leads the marketing side of things for the company, been following separately. That's when I first heard about the company. And then they announced the AI pin last year. I think even within our episode, we kind of...
Not only that, like in the video about the Rabbit R1, a very closely related device, I showed that famous Bloomberg interview where... what's his name? The CEO of Humane.
Imran
Chaudhry. Yeah, Imran. How he when he was talking, he didn't really seem to have a good answer for any of the questions that the anchors were posing. It was just, you know, from that moment, you could tell that it wasn't a fully fleshed out idea. Some of the main features were very cool, but were they useful? And I guess we'll get into it a bit more, but even the features that were purported to work didn't really work that well as well. So I've been following this company even back when all I knew about them was the patents that they were releasing, and I thought this is new, this is something very interesting. So of course I had my eyes glued on it, and I guess when I first started seeing the media come out about it, like, you know, when he was doing the Bloomberg interviews, I was quite let down and disappointed. I think the execution, obviously. Well, we can talk more about that.
Yeah, and when we saw the initial announcement about it, I remember in the podcast itself, we weren't too thrilled about it. Like, we saw that, okay, there was some cool stuff here and there as a concept, maybe even as a hypothesis, like, okay, it works
cool
in theory.
Idea, yeah.
But the execution is where people see the product, and unfortunately, it seems like it's not even... come close to hitting the mark, right? We'll get in the reviews itself. Brayden, did you see the Humane AI pin's reactions?
No, I watched it. What I can't seem to get my head around, though, is how they didn't... Like, they must have seen this coming, like, this response. Like, it's obnoxiously slow and insanely expensive. And I felt those were the two, like, major points. Mm. It's too slow to do anything that a phone can't already do, and it's... way too expensive for what it is.
A subscription fee as well, which obviously is ridiculous. I think it was, I don't know, it seems like one of those things where Imran was kind of out of touch with the average person. Like, what would they use this for? How much would they be willing to have this service? It seems like they had an idea, just ran with it, and didn't even think about the market, essentially. But yeah, just seeing some of the demos with it and some of the reviews, I guess we can start getting onto that now, but I've watched like 3 or 4 reviews, mm-hmm. and each one said the same thing, where it was a cool idea, but it's actually, how would you say it, hurtful to use. It actually feels like it frustrates you. It makes you angry. It makes you mad, because just the simple things that you wanted it to do, it wouldn't even be consistent in working or not working. And then when it did work, it would often give the wrong information. So you can't trust it to work. And when it works, you can't trust that it'll give the right information. So like, essentially, what is the point of that? And then there was also the issue with the overheating, where every reviewer was saying that there was an issue where you would use the projector for a little bit, and even if it was just sitting there, it would start to almost burn your skin. So I'll talk about this later, but I saw a pretty funny review by the founder of Rabbit. So he was comparing the R1 with the Humane Pin, and some of the stuff he had to say about that was funny, but I'll let you go into what else you think about it.
I think the R1's releasing this week as well. It'll start going out to public
very soon.
So I think this week, probably right after this episode comes out, you'll probably start seeing a lot of the R1 videos or review videos. So that'll be interesting to see how that actually compares, because you know everyone's a baller when it comes to reviewing other products, and when it comes to their own, it'll be interesting to see how that measures up. But overall, yeah, I think as we discussed in one of the previous episodes, it's all come to be true, right? Like, it's a hefty product with a hefty price. Mm-hmm. Doesn't feel intuitive. Doesn't feel anything more than just a cool idea at this stage. Expensive.
X's on the
exactly,
chart.
There's nothing positive, and we'll get into the MKBHD review, because he, I thought, was pretty, you know, rational and even optimistic about some of the stuff, you know, how he complimented the
build, yeah,
the build quality of it, and some of the ideas that where he could see some potential use. But other than that, it's honestly, as Brayden mentioned, like what the thing, like they probably should have seen this coming. But I think it's one of those things as well, when you're in that tech bro circle in Silicon Valley, sometimes you get into that idea that, oh, you know, you just have to build and fail and build and fail and build. But sometimes some ideas are just so bad, there's no point executing. Like, there's this also this idea of sunk costs, right? Like, you can't just keep going and going and going and forever and expect that, okay, that's part of the journey, right?
As you're talking, though, like, something else comes to mind, that Imran and co-founder, his wife, they were both part of the iPhone engineering team. Yes. So I think maybe they thought that some of that pedigree would carry them. Mm-hmm. So they're going to build a brand new device, like the iPhone again. It's like a new revolution. And maybe they got in their heads with that a little bit and thought, you know, anything that we put out that is new, people will just like it because it's cool. We could charge this much and all of that. But in reality, it just didn't.
Yeah, I think people use iPhone as an example in a lot of cases where they say that, you know, when the touchscreen came out and they got rid of there was no demand for a touchscreen, right? Like, they literally created the market for it out of potential.
Debatable. But I think,
how so? What do you think is debatable?
So there was a bit of a move towards touchscreens. Like, everyone famously points to the LG Prada, which was a precursor to the iPhone. It was a full screen touchscreen phone as well. But what killed that was it was resistive touch. Mm-hmm. So, you know how you have ATM machines and whatever, you have to press hard, you can't drag and whatever. Yes. Whereas iPhones were capacitive touch and multi-touch as well. So that's where all the gestures and the ease of use, that's what broke through. But the LG Prada at the time, people were raving, saying this was a revolution, etc. But those were the tech people. It's like the regular people didn't see that. So everyone that saw it thought it was there was going to be demand for it, but it was just the way that it was.
Oh, cool. That's interesting, because I thought, you're right. I remember reading about how the LG phone was, again, there were people within the circle were quite hyped about it. But then, again, with the mainstream side of things, like, nobody was thinking, oh, like, the phone that I have is pretty bad. Like, I have to touch buttons, literal buttons, to make a phone call. Mm. But then, in fact, I think there was actually resistance for a lot of people from wanting to move from button phones to actual having no buttons on the screen, right? Mm. So from that perspective, I thought they actually built a fair bit of even behavioral change for people.
That's true. Yeah.
People to wanting to accept that, okay, this is the way to go. And I know a lot of people personally who resisted that change for a long, long time, that I don't want to move to a touchscreen because, I don't know, it's like some people not wanting to wear Bluetooth headphones. I don't know. It's just,
I just said I've had bad experiences with
that. Sorry, I just had to pull the link there. But from that angle, I've seen, you know, how... I think a lot of people have that behavioral kind of comfort zone. And
yes,
so do I in a lot of ways, right? So I think that drove the change. And a lot of the tech companies, they kind of point to that aspect that, okay, we'll create the demand for it, right? Even Apple did it themselves with the Vision Pro now.
Mm-hmm.
They want to create a behavioral change where people want to wear, I don't know, ski goggles and operate, right? Having said that, like, do you think human AI pain, like, if they were a bit earlier in the launch, or, you know, maybe a couple years before all this AI stuff, do you think that would have been more suitable for them? Because then...
I still don't think so.
Or do you think they're a bit early, like Google Glass, for example?
Yeah, like, so if their AI... Think of it this way. If their AI was as conversational as any person, I think they'll be smashing it right now.
Right.
But it's just too dumb, too slow, just doesn't work. So, and there's no screen, so what else are you going to do with it? There's a projector, but it's like you have to do this and it doesn't really, you know. So it's, I think that the core technology, I don't know what went wrong, because they said they have multiple different LLMs in there doing different things, like Wolfram's taking care of the maths, and then they got ChatGPT or OpenAI sourced. I'm not sure if it's ChatGPT taking care of language, but still it seems very stupid. So I'm not sure what's happened there. But anyway, so I think they're too early in that stage, but... You know, even if they launched like a few years before this, like before all the AI hype and all of that, it's still the same thing. Like even if it was a little better than it is now, people would still want to use their phones. Like a lot of people are used to that, and I don't think that this would have been enough to drag them away from that at an earlier stage. So I think either way is just not working.
They did like a bit of a podcast tour when it was launching. I didn't see any of them, but one of the girls, Jules Cherpak, you know, who... has this Twitter thing. You know her. She covers a lot of tech and TikTok space as well. She did like a full-length podcast episode with Imran for the launch. I'm yet to listen to it, but it'd be interesting to see what he has to say, like, right before the launch as well. So that's going to be, I don't know if that saved anything for him. But overall, it just seemed like it's... I don't know how they're going to come out of this. Like, do you think they should... maybe launch another product with, not obviously in the same vein, but...
Look, if they did something much simpler that was well executed, possibly they'll get laughed at first, but then when people start using it and it's good... Because there is this silent, I guess, majority. I'm not sure if it's just... I haven't quite figured out if it's just the tech people or people in general that do want to see something new and do appreciate and respect and look up to a company that's doing something that's hard and something that hasn't been done before. So if they do move to something else, hopefully people will support them in that. Maybe they'll have a bit of reservations about the price the next time around. But I think that could work. But as it stands now, they've got to kind of lay low for a long time. Or it could be something like Cyberpunk, where the launch is horrendous, but then a few years down the line, it turns into a great product because they just worked on it and kept working on it. But...
It's Cyberpunk, like you mean the video game?
Yeah, Cyberpunk 2077. Apparently that's good now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. They fixed it. Like just heaps and heaps of updates and dedication.
Really? I had no idea. Did you see any of that, Brent?
Yeah. It's been like a constant, it's just slow fixes over and over and over again. Now it's at a point where apparently the game's really good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it can happen, but it's hard and it takes...
long time. Yeah. I've forgotten.
Obviously there's people that aren't following along, which would be like, oh, those guys, they did that stupid thing, right? And they're not going to, you know, see the new... product for what it is if they do it. But let me just talk about the Rabbit fiasco with so the CEO of Rabbit, what's his name? I never actually...
Jensen, I think.
Is it Jensen?
I think it's Jensen. Yeah, it's something with a J for sure. I'm pretty sure it's Jensen.
Okay. He did a kind of review comparison between obviously his Rabbit and the humane AI pin, but it was supposed to be neutral. He said, like, this is just going to be no editing. We're just going to do shot-for-shot comparisons and see how it works. But you could tell that they did have a bit of bias. For example, when they'll talk to the rabbit, they'll be, like, here, and then the AI pin was a bit further away and stuff. But, you know, just setting all of that aside, it seems like the rabbit is a good 20 to 30% faster than the human AI pin, and its image detection is way better.
Right.
And obviously the failure rate is a lot lower. And this is obviously from what they're showing, but to me it seems like the rabbit is doing more of what it promised, and for, you know, less than, who knows how much, less than half the price, plus yeah. also no subscription fee. So I'm looking forward to that. I hope that gets a positive reception, or else no other company is going to try this AI first interface again yeah. for a long time.
So what's his name?
Jesse Liu.
Jesse. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yes, Jesse
Liu. It's, I think, with that $199, isn't it? Is the price?
Yeah,
$199. With $199, they're immediately, you know, that's a big tick mark for so many people. Mm. It's like no subscription fee. It looks cool. Mm. Made by Teenage Engineering.
Yeah, or designed by them. But some people didn't
like the looks of it.
Yeah, so I was seeing some...
Too bright and...
Yeah, so they're saying it looks like a kiddie's toy. Like, but it was split. It does. It was split. So yeah. some people were saying it looks like a kid's toy, and some people were saying this is bold, this is cool, like yeah, whatever. Yeah. But yeah, I think... I don't know. It's just going to be so interesting to see how that launch goes. I'm really looking forward to the rabbit's launch.
In fact, like, I'd even consider getting it just to see, because if I had to choose, I'd definitely choose the R1, right? I think it's just simpler, easy to use. And as you mentioned, I think this got this, I don't know, interesting retro look to it that I thought was interesting. But overall, it'll be... I don't know if it'll kick off like the AI product craze that we spoke about in the Cold Fusion channel, right? Mm. How there's these new things coming out and there will be more of these. I'll take a kind of a bold prediction. This one revealed to us by Carl during our podcast or anything, but I think nothing would be an interesting company to go that route, because they've got quite a bit of expertise in doing, you know, interesting offshoot products within an established industry. Yeah. So I think with that kind of expertise and of course, you know, Carl's being, you know, he's a pretty smart guy, I think they'd be well positioned into coming up with something that's simple, cool, easy to access and intuitive.
So yeah,
on that AI hardware.
Yeah, space. There was another point I was going to say to this that I think I said this in the video, but I think this AI device only, unless someone does something extremely cool outside the box, will only be 1 or 2 years in lifespan, because So eventually going to be an app, and then that app's going to take off. Google could do it, you know, another company could do it. So you just point your phone at something and it tells you, or you just talk to your phone in natural language. And
people are kind of forgetting the Ray-Ban smart glasses. I think they still have an interesting place. Or something else that's, again, you know, if you don't wear glasses, I think that's where people kind of go a little bit like, you know, well, if I don't wear glasses, why would I wear something, you know, constantly? So that again is a market you have to, you know, change behavior stuff, as I mentioned.
Yeah, but that's a differentiated product, I think.
Yeah.
That versus...
But I'd put them in the same race. That's what I mean.
Well, oh yeah, because it can tell you what you're seeing as well, but it can't do regular conversational stuff though, can it?
It can take phone calls as far as I remember.
No, but as in you can ask the AI a question about something, general knowledge or you can do that.
It's also got this new update that lets you do that.
Okay.
That stuff.
Okay. Well, then that changes things a little bit.
But it's not as, I don't think it's as robust as the other ones in terms of the...
Well, humans are not robust.
Yeah, fair enough. But one thing I want to point out is how these companies, they position themselves that, you know, we're not here to replace the phones.
Mm.
But when you look at the lingo in their marketing, like even with R1, I remember they said, no, we're not here to you know, replace the smartphones and it's just going to be a separate product. With the advertising, I remember seeing this ad where, you know, they're promoting the product, but in the background, there's like a literal phone, like a video of a phone just breaking, like, you know, into pieces, almost like get rid of the apps or like no more apps, kind of like that angle that they're building on the marketing. So to me, it feels a little bit like they say the founders come up and say that, no, we're not here to get rid of your phones, but it does seem like that's the angle some of these companies are going for.
Mm.
And I don't think that's totally a bad angle, because I think I mentioned it in the past, but if you pair, you know, there's this whole idea of dumb phones, this whole idea of people just wanting to go offline. If you pair yourself with, I don't know, it's still two devices, but, you know, the Lite phone, again, you know, the co-founder was on this podcast, we spoke to him. If you have a Lite phone and if you have either an R1 or a device that's similar to that, you kind of have a lot of the stuff that you need for basic, you know, communication, for stuff. And it can still be smart enough, but not, you know, be totally switched on or being involved in the screen all the time. So I think there is a space for that as well, that people are also kind of overlooking.
Yeah, I think societally that segment is growing, but I guess as it stands, though, like if that's enough for most people, I guess it depends on the individual. I think some people might need, not necessarily need more, but be, you know, satisfied with more. On that kind of chopping off apps and whatever, I think a lot of the problem is actually social media apps,
yeah.
which I think the R1 doesn't have. So there's the obviously the dumb phone doesn't, yeah. light phone. Just another topic of apps though, with the whole LAM stuff for the, so that's large action model, which is the model within the R1 that allows it to go into your apps and do stuff and order you things and whatever. I feel that that is going to be probably not what we think. It sounds too hard to execute. Like, could you imagine, you know, ordering something online by just speaking the words and having it go to, like, I don't know, a restaurant, order you Uber?
I had to check multiple times, man. Like, even when I'm doing, like, ticket, like, purchases or just planning holidays, I sit down with the PDFs and be like, yep, okay, that's happening. So
yeah, it seems like such a big leap. Obviously, maybe it works some of the time, but yeah. I think the cost to making a mistake is so large that people will just be very wary of using it. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
That building of trust to get to that point has to be, I think, 100%.
Mm.
Like, 100% of the time, it can't be 99.9%. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It has to be 100% of the time you say, okay, I want
to plan a
trip to Europe.
Yeah.
For these many days, I want to see this with this amount of families. This is my budget. Done. Mm. Right? And it has to be 100% of the time. Mm. It has to be right. Yeah. And to get to that point, as you mentioned, it's going to be very, very difficult.
Actually, I was watching this video of someone who ordered an R1, and they recently did a press release, and they were saying that that feature is coming later. So they're actually not doing it for the launch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But
I remember they...
They promoted it.
They did. So I don't know if the SEC is going to be in. So we'll see.
Should have added that in the AI deception video.
Yeah, no, but I don't know. The promotional material of the R1 just in general, though, I've seen it so many times, like on Twitter, wherever, on X, but people are always like, what is this thing? What does it do? Like, no one actually understands from the advertising because it's just like, leave your apps behind or whatever, $199. It's just got the photo of the R1. If people are like, what is it?
That's not enough to, communicate that. But Brayden, would you use any of these devices just going forward?
Not in the current form. Like, I genuinely believe, like, you need a small ecosystem. Like, I think a watch as, like, the foundation would be the best. I think, like, a Fitbit size thing, same size as the Whoop. If they can manage to fit a basic display that just gives you the text of what the thing's feeding back to you when you talk to it, and the basic function of pressing yes to something or no to something, having your being able to tap to pay with your watch, just like all the basic functions that you need from a phone, except for apps, and being able to talk to it, and I don't know if they wanted to put a camera on it so you could point at something and ask what this thing is, like that would be cool.
Mm.
And then if you had glasses that link to it, so like the Ray-Bans, if you just have glasses with a small chip in it, the watch does all the processing, all the glasses just an add-on that gives it extra functionality, that would be cool.
Mm.
But I feel like a giant pin on your shirt, like ruining, like hanging off your shirt, and then a grenade right next to your heart, and then, you know, all this other thing, you pull your phone out, you're like, oh, whoops, that's my phone, and then you pull out the R1, and it's this thing, you know, I don't know. Just
you're totally
right.
You're totally on point.
Yeah.
Like, I like the idea of being able to take just a watch, leave my phone at home, and I can Bluetooth my headphones to it, and it'll, if it has a SIM card in it, it can listen to Spotify. I can do like all the basic functions that everyone does in their day-to-day life with a phone, just none of the extra social media and all that stuff.
Mm.
But I feel like with none of these products, you can do that.
Yeah.
So
I think maybe you're right. Maybe that might be the final form. Like, instead of carrying something extra, you just have it on your watch, which people already wear.
Yeah.
So I think that makes sense.
I think so here's a question. If the humane pin, wasn't a pin or whatever the grenade is, if it wasn't that, and if it was actually a watch or something that took the form of a watch, do you think that would have had, like, it'd still do the projection? Maybe not at $700, maybe let's say $200, right? Same price as R1. You still think that's...
No. Sorry, I'm just thinking from an engineering design point of view. Right. Like, these guys are already struggling with a form factor this big to dissipate heat. And the battery life, you got to keep swapping them. I don't know. I think they just built that thing weirdly. But say it did work and it wasn't a watch form, I think it would do a lot better.
Yeah.
I think it would definitely... People would gravitate
to it. And I agree with Brayden there. I think something that's simple that people already wear, I think maybe even like a ring sort of stuff that control gestures or... a watch or even the glasses. I think between that, wasn't there another company that was making a pendant of some sort? I think they're called Pendant, AI Pendant or something.
I feel like it's literally like anything that you currently would use, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like exactly. Anything. Yeah.
And those are the things that people mostly use, right? So so I think, if a company can crack that code, I think any behavioral changes is difficult unless the product is really life-changing like the iPhone was for many people. Mm. So, but, you know, if you, let's talk about MQBHD and the reaction that he got, right? I mean, did you guys all see the... What did you think of his review? Do you think it was fair? Do you think it was too critical? What did you think of the title? Start with Braden.
Besides the title being slightly inflammatory, like I thought the video was perfect. Like I didn't think there was anything.
So you have the problem? Do you have a problem with the title?
Well, no, I don't have a problem with it. Right. It's clickbait, but like so is everything else. But like I guess if you had to point at something and it's like this is the worst thing I've ever reviewed, like.
But then it's not clickbait if it's true because he genuinely believed that it's the worst product.
But then even in his review, he did well when he commented back. He said, "Yeah, the title's a little bit."
Like, yeah, he did.
So I mean, but that's the only thing you could point at. I feel like his review was perfect. Like it went through everything. It explained the good. It explained the bad. He gave you demonstrations of all the bad.
Yes.
Like I wasn't expecting him to make a. I wasn't expecting the response he got. But
neither. I thought it was quite interesting. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, pretty much the same. Like I thought the review was very well balanced in the way that he normally does it. Like he didn't seem overall just hating on the company just because it was just they made a bad product and this is what's good about it and this was what doesn't work so well. I thought it was extremely like there was no bias in that sense. So when all the flame wars started on X, it was like. I just didn't understand it. I literally couldn't get my head around it. It was very bizarre. It was almost like there was some cult vendetta with this company, which I didn't know existed, that just popped out. You know, I have no explanation.
You know how you were saying earlier just today how there's a group of people who want to see new products and want to try out within the tech space, especially. I think MKBHD is one of those persons. Mm. Like I think he's been covering stuff just as you have been for almost a decade now. And especially in the tech world, and you know, as you get excited by seeing new products, I think he's one of those people as well. I don't know him personally, but that's what I feel when I see he's genuinely enthusiastic when something cool comes out. So if it was a great product, I'm sure he would have, you know, gone his way and be like, yeah, this is a good product. But it just wasn't, and therefore it got. But a lot of people were saying that, you know, it's got the title, and a lot of people didn't watch the whole review, and it quote unquote might kill the company, right? Which was again, like I don't understand, like why should that be on the reviewer themselves? Yeah, you have to be very ethical in saying that you can't be saying stuff that doesn't exist. But he didn't do that, so again, I don't understand. But having said that, you know, I follow Colin and Samirino, who covered the creator space, right, in the YouTube world. He actually got on in an interview with them before the release of the video and talked about that he's going to release this video and that's going to be the title and whatnot. So it seemed like he was expecting the backlash that it received. And they were having a conversation and saying that, yeah, I'm going to press upload in like 3 hours. It's going to, and I'm going to call it the worst preview I've ever. So I think maybe because of the Fisker review that he did, which is a car review, which again, apparently face a lot of negative reviews after his stuff, and a lot of people stopped buying because of his reviews. I think maybe he expected something similar with Humane and Pin, and I think he was on the money there. But yeah, overall, do you think, you know, he followed up with a video saying that do bad reviews kill companies, or do bad products kill companies?
And I agree with what he said, where it's like no, because if it's a bad product, that's going to kill the people. Are going to find out anyway. But at you as a reviewer, you're just trying to help people decide on where they put their money. And by saying something's bad, you could save a lot of people heartache from shelling out $700 with a monthly subscription and then realizing that, hey, this is the worst thing I've ever used. So I think ultimately it's a good thing for him to have been critical and just tell people the truth. I guess that's what it comes down to. So,
yeah. And with, I guess, bad products, you know, do you think it'll kill Humane AI or Humane company now? Because it's a bad product and so many bad reviews.
Yeah.
It's the double whammy.
So his video, what's it at now? Like 4-5 million, something like that. Mr. Who's the Boss also did one. Yeah. That's probably around the same.
I've also got, you know, The Verge and other...
Yeah, so like if you're at all around the tech space, you would have seen at least some publicity about it. But they're all not, you know, it's not some grand conspiracy where they're just getting together and saying that. But just seeing it in so many different places, I think the brand image of Humane has definitely diminished a lot. Because before the release and before the reviews, they were just this new company. No one knew if they were good or bad. It was just a thing. But then now it's just, it, you know, it doesn't work. It's expensive. It's hot, heavy. And I think that is going to take a lot to undo. And everyone's going to get, anyone that buys one will be laughed at essentially by their friends. So I think it's going to really, I think it's going to dent their sales, no doubt. I think so.
Somebody got laid off from Humane, I think, for the marketing team because of the bad reviews that MKBHD.
No, I think he just was the one who supplied.
The influencer?
No, he supplied it to MKBHD. He was on the team.
Yeah, he was like the influencer relationship manager or something like that.
He was the one who gave the review unit to Marquez.
But what, that's so
it's,
odd.
It's
though.
Bad. Like the company, I think, is just doing damage control and just.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good on their end, you know?
No.
They have put a couple of tweets that have been positive saying, like, we try to get better and whatever. Very PR, but. I guess what they're doing behind the scenes by kicking this guy off and other things isn't great. So, yeah. What about you, Braden? What do you think?
I think they will now have to immediately start working on another product, right? No matter what, they have to. Like, because otherwise, it's all damage control and it's just going to be permanent damage control where all they do is try to develop software updates and try to fix little issues and just constant updating and managing. Because now it's got a SIM card and everything. There's a service attached to it can't be attached to a phone, so it has to be done through this proprietary system. So like now they have to manage it forever. What is it going to do? Like if they go under, is it just completely unusable now?
It is.
Like,
it would be and that's what some people were saying. Like if you don't pay your subscription fee for like a couple months or whatever, how long it takes, they cut you off.
Just
and then it's
brick.
Paperweight and it's like, is this the world we live in? Like what's happening?
Either and they will cave and make an app.
They're introducing the Humane app. Revolutionary AI technology.
That's only available on the R1. Right. The company that said no apps except this one.
Or they'll have to make something else, and then whatever they do, like make it as high quality or as budget friendly as possible, and then literally go along with the. Give it like within their own confidence, give it out to all the reviewers.
Or what they could do is like make the Humane AI Pin 2 and then like fix all the stuff with software issues, even though that could come over the air, but then sell it for like $200, no subscription fee, and then maybe that could work.
Mm. I quite like the thing where you could just change the menu option with just by the changing the angles on your palm when it was projecting. Did you see that?
Like how you, like as in if you want to do numbers, you go into the, it's like a 3D interface.
Yeah,
kind
like
of
I thought I haven't seen a lot of that. Mm. Well, I don't know if you guys have.
But like in any other product? Of course not. I think it's an innovative UI experience for sure, but it's tedious. It's not friendly. It's like, it's innovative, but it's not beneficial to the user in any way. It's like, how is this any faster than just getting out my phone and...
No, I agree. But where I'm getting at is, I think there could be use cases for that if it was, you know, built within like a watch or, you know, on your glasses where
I really thought about that. And I just don't really see...
And like no use cases at all?
I don't see how this is ever better. I just don't see it.
Sometimes I find it tedious to just use, I don't know, like just... On the watch, sometimes too small. I don't know, like to press the button. So,
does not feel like the AI would come in though, right? So the less you have to touch it, the better.
Yeah,
right. But it has still had all the functionality if you absolutely needed to. But the AI, you could talk to it and it would do all the basic functions, and then it just had all the tech in it to do what you needed to do.
Mm. Right. I think what it comes down to is like the AI pin should have been so smart that screen is rare. Like you only need it to preview a photo or something or whatever, but. I don't think, neither is good. The display isn't good or the AI isn't good. So it just ends up being a heating paperweight on your shirt like that. So,
terrible. We're going to talk a little bit about the last video that we uploaded on the Cold Fusion channel. It's titled AI Deception, how some tech companies are fooling us. It's quite an interesting one because, you know, we've been kind of, been on this whole AI journeys and kind of lined up with the start of the podcast, but you know, we've seen it essentially, you know, grow in front of our own eyes in a lot of ways, I guess, in terms of the latest quote unquote revolution of the AI side of things, right? And I think it's gotten to a point where we also have seen a lot of bad players in the space, And the video was kind of just trying to see the flip side of the positive stuff. But it seems like a lot of people kind of saw that the whole of AI is bad. And I'm seeing more and more of that as well, even on Twitter and other places where people are like, oh no, this AI equals to NFT equals to same stuff.
And it's strange. It always happens and people don't seem to have nuance. They can't seem to see an application that's working well and doing what it needs to versus someone that's just saying this is AI and it doesn't do anything, or something that just doesn't work as promised. And I think that's what the video was trying to get at. It was obviously there's good players in the AI space that are actually creating real value. Mm-hmm. And we even said further on in the video that, you know, some of these AI systems are getting so good they're replacing people. Mm-hmm. So that's the one side. But then on the other side, you have just people that, you know, Amazon, for example, that had that system where you're supposed to walk into a store and just get your thing and go out. And then there's these cameras and machine learning that sees what you buy and then determines the cost and all of that automatically without you doing anything. But that ended up to be 1,000 workers in India that were manually reviewing that process, and not just for training the AI, but actually, you know, years into this project, 4 or 5 years, they were still manually doing that. And so Amazon was caught with their pants down lying about that. But I think it just goes to show that with any major industry, there's always just going to be like a lot of froth and fluff around. You kind of got to determine what's what. So
it also seems like there's this whole other side of the community or society who just don't let anything do with AI at all. I think they see AI as a complete negative without any positive as well. So I think some people are latching onto the video thinking that, you know, this will become the flag bearer for that. But I guess they're also conveniently leaving out the positive that we see as well. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, I think a video is in the cards to talk just about the positive side of things.
Yeah, that's coming. But I think the people... maybe this is an assumption, but a lot of that group of people that are scared of, not scared, but just don't see, they always see AI as a negative thing. There could be multiple reasons for it, but I think overall, just broadly speaking, it's like a fear of change, fear of something that's different, because AI is ultimately, I guess what we call it, the generative AI side of things, isn't something we've really seen before, at least to this level. So I think that unsettles a lot of people.
Yeah.
But obviously there are some bad uses, like you can get people that create fraudulent things or whatever with generative AI, or use it to, you know, a boss could use it to take your job, etc. So there are legitimate reasons for it, but I don't think you can group it all in as the one thing. There's good uses, bad uses, and yeah, I think it's just something that I've been seeing more of recently, people just hating.
Yeah, with the and I guess at times it totally makes sense. For example, did you guys see the Netflix true crime documentary that came out? I mean, it always comes out with a
new
documentary, but apparently there was one that came out last week, and people saw images that were used within the documentary as AI, because it had like fingers and stuff that were like all the typical, you know, the AI fingers. Yeah. And so and it's clear that they 100% used AI within the documentary, but there was people just upset. That makes me think, if they didn't catch,
no one would have said anything.
No one would have said anything. But if they did it really well, you know, and they were cautious and you won't be able to tell the difference, and then they announced that, you know, we used AI in some parts, would the reaction still be the same? Would a group of people still be like, oh, you've used AI and therefore this whole documentary is completely moot? Or
yeah, I think there would be some people like that. They just say, they see it, or they perceive it as a reduction of quality.
Yeah.
Like, how can I trust anything else if these guys can't even hire someone to do this work? And they also see it as taking work away from someone else. Mm. I think those people will exist. Maybe not so much as the amount of people that got upset because they saw that, you know, the six fingers or whatever. But I think there would still be a sizable amount of people that wouldn't be happy with that.
Yeah. What do you think, Burton?
I think it's one of those things that everyone will just be bothered with for a while until they're just not anymore. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like any other tool, you know, every couple of years a new tool will come out that'll make a job significantly easier to do and will inevitably remove someone from the process, which is sad that that person doesn't have a job anymore, but it's kind of just how everything's gone, especially in the media stuff that we do. You could never shoot this with just one person behind the scenes before.
So true.
But
so
now you can. And I think AI, especially in the creative side of things, is going to make jobs easier to do, And I think it's just an unfortunate reality that we have to deal with. But I think everyone still will have, there'll still be niches that require people to do all these individual jobs. But it's, yeah, I don't know. I feel like people will be bothered for a little while longer until they just forget. Or,
dude, I think you've hit such a great point there. You know how, you know, we're creating this podcast, and granted, it's not like, you know, a radio quality, you know, top 10 podcast or radio show that existed in the past, right? But it's still a certain standard that wouldn't have been possible with just one person behind the scene. You're kind of running the show behind the scenes here with a couple of cameras, with the console, with the editing and side of things. Previously, even like 10 years ago, I would say you would have needed a few more than just one person, or even harder, or even, you know, way longer, as I mentioned, to make this thing. So, but we've kind of accepted that, okay, it's just one person doing the job of three, essentially, or previously maybe even 5 or 10, right? So I think you're totally right, man.
Yeah, I think it's just progression in tech, like anything else. I think it's just, this one's so obvious, you know, like it's like, oh, look, an AI can do a drawing for you. You don't have to hire someone to come and sit there for hours and draw that thing. And in a way that is insanely powerful for the creative process, but it's damaging to that other, you know, the other part of that career. But yeah, I don't see it slowing down. I don't see it stopping. So until like AI is good enough where we can't tell the difference, or people just stop caring.
I think people have to discern between art and commercial purposes. Like, for example, the places where people will get replaced will mostly be within the commercial spaces. We'll get back into the whole music side of things because that kind of ties into it. But within art itself, you know, like there'll still be people who'll still be drawing, right? There'll be people who'll still be making music. That's not going to go away. And it's like it'll only be used with, as we're already seeing, you know, companies using AI for their advertisements or for graphic design or things like that. I think that's the only thing that'll be. And in a lot of cases, artists hate working for corporations anyway. Like, you know, I've been a creative my whole life, and I've been doing graphic design for a long time, and I hated when I had to do stuff for like big corporations for a bit, because there's so little
freedom
and creative control, because ultimately you're kind of, you know, servicing someone else. And when you're in that mindset,
you are the AI. You're just the slave that gets told what
exactly,
to do.
And yeah, exactly. So in a lot of ways, it does free up many creative people from doing those commercial stuff, but at the same time, yeah, you are also replacing an individual in a lot of ways. So I think it'll take some time, but it'll get used to it. Just on the note of Netflix, have you seen that they've hit record number of subscribers after the password?
Yes, sharing thing got axed. Yeah, I think that was a real shock turnaround. I think Netflix has somehow managed to...
Dude, I was telling you, remember, because when we were doing the show more and more often, and we covered that story when they announced that they were going to start hunting people down for sharing password, I said that there has to be, like these companies aren't stupid. You know, they have data to see, okay, how potentially we're going to, unless you're, I don't know, humane. I'm sorry, it's too soon. But they have enough data to know how people are going to react, and then what's going to cause them to make more money at the end of the day, right? And
you'd assume so, yeah.
Yeah, and therefore, like, yeah, they had a little bit of backlash at some level of, like, I think a bit of dip in the numbers, and now they're making record profits.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it still is a very, like, gutsy move to do that, though,
it is,
because you
100%.
Have to trust that your users love Netflix enough that they're not going to leech and they're going to pay instead of just, like, doing something else. So I think that could have still backfired. But
100%, 100%. But I feel in most cases, not always, in most cases, these companies have enough data and analytics and insight to make these bold moves. And whether it's, you know, companies getting canceled or, you know, taking a political move or anything of that sort, in most cases, they know they're going to be okay. And ultimately, it's the bottom line that they want to hit, you know, or I guess the top line. With Netflix, have you guys played any of the games that's in the...
No, not yet.
I was using it, you know, before a flight. I downloaded the app because I usually watch it on my TV. And it came up with San Andreas in there.
Oh.
I didn't click on it because I had stuff to do. But this is so weird. You see GTA San Andreas on my Netflix app. It's just so odd.
Yeah.
I think I'll give it a go. I think
that was during the time when they were just like panicking. And like, we've got to do something. Yeah. We have to do something. Because I remember getting an email from someone who was working at Netflix. He wanted to be anonymous. But he was saying that within the company during that time, that whole games jump was just very haphazard. No one knew in the company knew what they were doing. It was just kind of like, we're doing games now. Okay. Yeah, like, so I feel that was just an element of the time. I think it's not going to really be anything, but very, that was a very interesting period for them.
Yeah. If anyone's tried the games in the Netflix app, let us know how it is. It'd be interesting. But I guess just closing in on this episode, the what's it called? Udio?
Udio, yeah.
So it's a new music app, or I guess new AI music app, as we spoke at the start of the episode. It lets you do stuff pretty much with just typing a sentence and it feeds back cohesive songs with lyrics, with sounds, with genre that you want out of it. Mm. Actually, I don't know if you've been following the whole, in the hip-hop world, the whole Drake versus Kendrick beef.
So I've seen little bits, but I don't know what's...
Yeah, so last week there was a leak of a Drake track that features Tupac and Snoop AI, like Snoop Dogg AI. And some people are naturally mad again, like, why is he doing this? But again, it's seeping into the mainstream.
I think so.
If it's confirmed to be...
Say if it is, but I think what Braden's saying is true. Like, just given enough amount of time, I think people just be used to it, and then it becomes a non-issue.
the funniest thing is, you know, you follow Anthony Fantano. He's like, with Tupac, okay, I still get it. Like, you know, he's not here. Mm-hmm. With Snoop Dogg, have you seen his feature list? Like, you just pay him enough money and he'll probably even come into this podcast and, you know, say a few words, right?
Yeah.
So it's a bit funny how, you know, you shouldn't need AI for that either.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, just going back to the whole Udio stuff. So if you've been using it a fair bit, I've listened to a few of the songs. I know you were going crazy when you first. You were just sending me WhatsApp messages. My phone was almost heating up as much as the human AI pin. But I was listening to a few of those tracks, and I honestly couldn't believe at first. But then I was like, you know, it's where everything's going. Right?
Yeah, it is. It's funny though. There's just a few little quirks about it that just surprise me. Like, for example, sometimes it'll just come up with random things that you don't expect, and it's like they kind of come into existence and fade away. They're just like, for example, this interesting beat that's here for a little bit and then disappears. It almost seems like it's this fuzz, like audio fuzz that it's built a song out of, and it's kind of like not quite set. Like, there's some weird things going on in the background, but it feels like in the second generation, like it'll just be perfect. And also fidelity, like it sounds like maybe a 68K MP3 kind of deal. It's not, doesn't have that crispness. Feels a bit washy.
It's free as well right now.
Free,
isn't it?
Free. And you can have almost
but unlimited. There's like a limitation?
It says 600, but I think it resets per day, I'm pretty sure. So, when you generate, it gives you two versions, and then you probably pick the best version and go down that path and whatnot in terms of how you create the songs. But, yeah, sometimes the end product can be quite crazy. But in terms of being a producer and musician, what I'm going to use this for would be just generating samples. Like, you know, if I want to type in, you know, just like some piano riff of something or whatever, and then I can just like, oh, here, that's a cool bit, then chop that up and do something with it. And then, yeah, so it's like a infinite sample generator for me. Like, it's not really going to be... like you make a song with it and then, because I don't know, it just feels weird. It's like, what have I really done? It's kind of like, I got an idea, yeah, for sure, but not much more than that. But also the voices are what surprised me as well, because I can do a whole bunch. Like, I've heard some crazy country songs, some R&B, hip-hop, etc. But the fidelity of the voices sometimes is indistinguishable from a real human if you go to the R&B side of things, some of the harmonies that it comes up with are so good. It's like, you know, you're back in like 95, you know, it's just like amazingly well thought out composition in that sense. But then it'll just do something weird and it's like, why do you do that? Like, so it's just, if you could control it a bit more, I think that would add, you know, it'll be an order of magnitude better, but you can't. Like, it's the output you get and you just extend it, and you can remix it in a way and you can have a slider of how different or how samey it is, but... Mm-hmm. Usually the more you remix it, the more weird stuff starts coming out. There was this one time I was like, I wonder what happens if you just keep extending the song for as long as it goes. And then it just started coming up with these like machine voices and like weird stuff. And I've broken it a few times. Like I had this R&B song that I was trying to do and I extended it forward, but tried to type in a whole bunch of stuff that didn't match. And it just sounded like this. It's so weird. It's like a grandma like a German grandma reading a storybook. Oh, and that was it. It was just silent apart from that. And it's like, where did this come from? It was like,
that
it does
is some, spooky.
It
as
does
hell.
Some weird, weird stuff sometimes. Yeah, but, and it's like, it's amazing because you just never know what you're going to expect sometimes. But it's just like such an interesting tool to work with at this point. But yeah.
The space has come a long way from where, again, a couple of years ago when we first started the podcast, we were, do you know how you're trying a few of these that was already out there?
Mm.
And some of the stuff that was spouting out was like, you know, the voice of the damned, remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah, yeah. In a couple of years' time, it's completely changed.
Mm. Yeah, like obviously I think, we can see it now. We don't even have to go into the future and look back. But like, yeah, 2022 onwards, like this 3 or 4 year period is going to be like that's the era AI really started. You can tell, like, because you know, first it was images, then no, was it text? Text first, then images, then video, then music. That's kind of like all the
creative.
Yeah, it's just the full just axed. And a lot of people online are saying, why is it the creative stuff that's getting owned first? And that's a really good question, but I think it's just a happy accident. Like, we're building these models and they just happen to be able to do creative tasks along the way. It's not like...
But also because the most data that is there is in that field. Like, when you compare to the, you know, like, for it to be able to do something that's more menial or something that's more technical, there isn't a lot of data for,
that's true.
I don't know, like, you know, if you want to be a rocket scientist, this AI to figure out the next, there isn't a lot of available data. But then if you think of music, if you think of art, if you think of, you know, anything of that sort, it's just so much of
that's,
it out there.
That's probably a better point. Like, the training data set is a lot larger. If they get it legally, I don't, remember that OpenAI interview with the...
Yes. And that's not the problem with the video. A lot of people are upset thinking that it's definitely trained on copyrighted data, right?
Yeah.
So that could be a factor in how or if it ever actually gets released, because then what does it train it on? And then even the music or the sound that's coming out of it, how much of it can actually end up using? And if, you know, you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. So what if it starts sounding like something that already exists? And so chances are it probably would.
And that's a real phenomenon in AI, like neural networks, it's called overfitting. Mm. So like sometimes, like when you try and generate something, it would like have something in its data set that it would pretty much exactly use. And like sometimes you might not know.
Yeah.
But anyway, just my overall thoughts on it, just wrapping up as a musician, like when I first started using it, it was like, this is really cool, but also very sad at the same time.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, meme of the hallway where that Grim Reaper is going down. And
one door after the other.
Yeah, and then the last one was the music. Yeah, and then... You know, if you're a musician that's, you know, working for a stock library or you sell your songs in some capacity, it's just,
again,
what are you going to do? Like,
just going back to the example of the graphic design stuff, I think it's going to be similar in this case as well. Like, I think that's the corporate angle that are going to, like, stock music. And, you know, if somebody needs a sound for a quick video on YouTube or, you know, like, when you're a musician... Or when you want to be a musician, you want to kind of express yourself as much as possible, not necessarily become the background noise of, unless you are dedicating your creative craft to build a score for a movie or something, right? That's different. But you don't want to end up in, I don't know, like a waiting 30-second phone call, you know, when somebody's...
That's not your goal, yeah.
I would assume most musicians' goal is not to be the 30 seconds while waiting for customer service and a phone call, right?
But, okay, but it goes even beyond this, because in the comment section of some of this early UDO stuff, there was a lot of people saying, it's not going to be long until there's a number one hit song that was made with AI, and someone was like, there probably already is, but I'm not saying there is, but give it 1 year, 2 years, third version, fourth version, the AI could come up with something that's extremely catchy, just this happy accident, and the user's typed in the lyrics, it does everything great, and just...
I mean, and I guess there's, you know, talks about Spotify and how they, not click farm, but I guess, you know, there is like intricate systems that allow for, you know, only the Taylor Swifts and the Drakes and to keep getting the most plays, right? I think because they end up becoming that top 10 songs or the most listenable stuff on the clubs and stuff like that. So I think that stuff, yes, you probably could sneak in an AI stuff.
Just
in
a
there.
once-off random
stuff. But I think, again, going back to the very first question I asked you about, if you learned that your favorite band, you know, or an artist.
Okay, wait, sorry, just one thing on that that point, but I think this, the AI music side of things, is going to struggle with this because, yes, you can have that hit song mm-hmm. that is AI generated and it sounds a certain way, but you're not going to be able to do that again. It's not going to be able to create totally different songs, but that sounds like the same yeah. band. It's always going to be different. I think that's a problem with generative AI. We're struggling with it, with like coherency within characters and whatever. It's just one of those things. So until that gets fixed, then this question doesn't really work. But I'm still going to answer the same way I always did. If I found out that my favorite band was AI, I wouldn't listen. I wouldn't like it.
Exactly. Yeah. So and I think there's two kinds of listeners. One is, I would say, the more passive kind of listeners. You know, when I'm, for example, you're working and I need just something in the background, I don't really care who's singing. I don't care about the live story. I don't care. But then some of my favorite artists, it doesn't matter what they put out. I'll still give it a listen because it's their human story. It's their character arc that's informing that next song. Mm. And for me, that is part of the creative process that I see that's coming out of these individuals, right? Or even a band telling a story that's relatable. But when AI does it, I think it's just, again, as a passive thing, if it's in the club, if it's in, you know, just when I'm the shopping or something and just playing, I really wouldn't care.
But you're a music enthusiast, though, and I'd say that I kind of am as well. But I think there's a lot of people out there that just hear something catchy. They don't care. They'll put it on their playlist.
And they're the passive listeners, right? So I think that the need... Again, I don't know. Like, Brendan, would you call yourself a music enthusiast or...?
I don't know. I'm somewhere in between. Like, I do like a few bands very specifically and I will listen to everything that comes out under their specific names. But
yes.
Otherwise, it's just... I'm out of music and I need something new.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'll go through all my Spotify day lists and recommended stuff and yeah.
So again, how do you think this would play out for the industry? Like would people, again, people who aren't necessarily even into music like yourself, would they?
I think the way that it'll happen will be through like Instagram and TikTok, like everything else. You know, there's just so much music in the top 20, whatever now that's just got popular because someone used it in a
TikTok song
and everyone used it on theirs and it just became a popular song.
Yeah.
I think it'll be the same thing because people don't even look at the song half the time. They just use the sound.
Exactly.
And then it just goes and then people go, oh, what is that song called? And they go search it up on Spotify and it's there and now it's in the top 20.
Yes.
So I think most AI music will, that's how it will get popular, not through someone specifically looking for the artist associated with it.
100%. And I think that being in the top 100 or top 20, whatever, I don't think that's the be-all, end-all for an artist, right? So for example, they usually end up going in there. I think people forget like what the next steps are, right? Like, okay, so if there's a one-off person in there, they might get maybe like, I don't know, if you think of it from marketing funnel, you might get like 5% of people who will get interested in the artist themselves, probably check out the other songs, and they might capture, you know, 2 or 3% of that whole TikTok sound coming down to that, maybe 1 or 2% of the people who'll keep following that artist forever, right? So that's the only benefit of getting into the top 20 or whatever, like other than maybe financial rewards. Like that's how you capture. But when people find out that, okay, this is an AI sound, like that's where the story ends. Mm. Like there's nothing else to follow. Maybe, okay, let me see what else this AI bot or company comes out with.
But when they discover it's an AI sound, what does that really mean now? Because what if it's some guy who figures out how to manipulate the AI into making hits? Like this might be rare, but his songs are always a little bit different, but always catchy, and they follow him because of that.
I think this is going to sound a bit... This might sound like I'm looking down on DJs and EDM artists, but it'll be similar. But it'll be similar, right? Because a lot of people looks at EDM artists as inherently poor in quality as opposed to somebody who sings an acoustic or like, you know, can play an instrument physically, right? Mm. So I think it'll be similar to that. There could be lots of David Guettas and, you know, and lots of, I'm naming names now, sorry. and again, no disrespect to, I listen to EDM and, you know, those kind of stuff as well, but it'll be like that where there's one person making these hit numbers and you'll probably get people following that individual AI art, the person who's doing this AI stuff, right? Mm. But for the... for the other spectrum where people are coming back to, you know, like I'm not necessarily saying these are tour artists, but people do come back to them for relatability, for connection, for being able to just be able to, you know, unwind and or just follow this person's trajectory rather than just being in an event and listening to, you know, I don't know, bangers or something of that sort. So I think that's my ultimate point is there'll still be a place for true musicians despite all this AI stuff.
And I think that's true, definitely. But I can't help but feel like there's almost a finite pie. Just take Spotify, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more of these AI tunes that start coming in there is just taking a bit away from everyone else. I can't help but feel that that's the way it's going to be.
I'll kind of use the analogy of shorts, right? When it was starting to blow up, we spoke about it, right? Like, should we go into the shorts side of things with Cold Fusion and stuff? And we haven't still, right? And you said that you were kind of scared that with shorts, a lot of the, people will only consume shorts and that'll take away their time from watching longer form videos, right? Do you think that has happened? Because I think...
Anecdotally, I've heard it, but not to a massive extent.
Yeah. Because I feel the people who listen to shorts, who watch shorts or like stuff and then don't watch longer form videos, they probably wouldn't have watched longer form videos anyway. Maybe a small percentage, but I feel it's also within the personality or the type of content someone consumes, right? So similarly, I think with music, there will be people who will only be passive listeners, right? Who'll only listen to stuff, not care about the artists, only on the TikTok sounds, maybe have a few Spotify playlists. That's it. But there'll always be people, maybe it'll be getting smaller in number, but I don't think it'll be a huge degree to change what we already have right now. I don't think it's going to be drastically different in the next few years, but that's, again, my...
I guess what I was mainly just going from like a monetary aspect. So in terms of you have a playlist with 100 songs and right now 100 artists are getting money, but then, 50 of them are AI and then...
But people make money in music?
Like 2 cents, but you know what I mean.
Like, it'll be like one cents now. I agree. Yeah, that's from that angle, I can agree with you. But I think that's a separate conversation in of itself where, musicians and artists, they're struggling financially regardless. And AI will definitely make it harder. I can agree with that from that aspect. But in terms of only creative side of things and building a community and making a following, being an artist, all that stuff, I still feel that's going to be untouched by AI.
But then in 2100, like everyone's like AI musicians.
Well, we can pull this podcast up back then and, we can have a talk with my hologram after I'm long gone.
From the Humane Pin 60 or something?
Man, kill me if I'm on Human Pin 60 or something. Like, just get rid of the bricks. That's going to be the
worst. All right. I think we're going to end the episode there. Hope you enjoyed it. And good to see you guys again. Hopefully you enjoyed listening to this. And we'll catch you again soon for the next episode. So cheers.